In the Great Hall of the Justice League, there are assembled the world's four greatest heroes, created from the cosmic legends of the universe. Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, Aquaman, and those three junior super friends, Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. Their mission, to fight injustice, to right that which is wrong, and to serve all mankind.
Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of For All Mankind, a Super Friends podcast. For All Mankind is a read-through show covering DC Comics' classic Super Friends series, which ran for 47 issues from 1976 to 1981. Proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and joining me this episode is my super friend, Mike Staley. Hi, Mike.
Hello, everyone. Yeah, basically, I'm Mike Staley, and what you get when you try to get Michael Bailey on Wish.
You are my kind of nerd, Mike, because you reached out to me, I think, almost 2 years ago, wanting to do this specific issue. And only someone of a particular nerd stripe is that obsessive to think that far ahead, you know, to be like, oh man, I want to do, it's this issue I got to do. So let me talk about, let me ask Rob about this in 2023 when he gets to it. I was like, yeah, sure, Mike. If we're all still alive, then yeah, all right, we'll do it. Absolutely.
So yeah, really.
it took long enough, but we are here. So again, welcome to the Hall of Justice.
Funny enough, because it had been so long, when you messaged me saying, hey, we're finally coming up on your episode, my first thought was, oh yeah, that's right, I did ask to do that, didn't I?
That's right. Who is this? Who are you? What show? What is this? Yeah, no, that can happen sometimes when people...
Is this the one about Namor?
Yeah, right, exactly. When someone pitches something that far ahead, it can get a little like... Just double checking. Are you still interested in this? So again, I'm glad you're here. We're here to talk about Super Friends number 43. It features everyone's favorite villain, the Overlord, plus the giant domed Futurio. But we'll get to that all in a moment. But first, I got Mike. I have to ask you, of course, like, what is your history, if you have one at all, with the Super Friends comic?
Well, Super Friends, that's the Marvel one, right? Admittedly, when I was telling a friend of mine about this, he actually said, is that one Marvel? And I was like, no, that's DC.
Right.
Admittedly, the main reason I picked this issue is because this is the first Super Friends comic that I ever read, was this issue.
All right.
And as far as the cartoon, I didn't watch it as a kid. I have been of late working my way through it. I purchased the first season on Amazon Prime and have been working my way through it. It's just one of those things that didn't really catch me as a kid. I mostly watched like the Superman solo cartoon and the Superboy cartoon, which admittedly, I think I liked that one more because Crypto was on it. But so admittedly... Well, I'm obviously very familiar with the characters. Super Friends in and of itself is something I am just starting to introduce myself to.
So, okay, maybe you won't remember this because it was a long time, but like, had you seen other issues of Super Friends before this, or this was the first time you'd seen it? Because if you had seen other issues, I would make you wonder, what was it about this one that made you pick it up?
Actually, the reason I had initially read this was because I was starting to make plans for kind of an anthology DC podcast where I would look at a number of books from a particular point in time.
Ah, there you go.
And
okay.
Somewhere along the line, I had hit this point, and thus this was one of the comics that was in that period. So I happened to pick it up. Admittedly, my getting this particular book was completely at random.
Okay. All right. Fair enough. Like I said, this is Super Friends number 43. It was on sale January 22nd, 1981, So, you know, from the intro, that this is the year 1981 is the year that the series Super Friends ended. So this is our first book to be released in the final year of the series, of course. So, before we get to the plot, of both the stories in this issue, I want to ask you, Mike, what do you think of this cover by Kurt Schaffenberger and, Bob Smith?
Well, I'll tell you, one of the things that caught my eye as soon as I saw the cover was Wonder Woman. And I love the fact that you've got all the heroes, you know, in their little bubbles contained. And I love the fact that they have her bracelets fashioned, because they were always going with the whole the one way to weaken her was if a man fastened her bracelets. So I like, while everybody else is just kind of sitting in their respective pods, they have Wonder Woman weakened in the proper way.
Right. Right. And we'll cover that in the story. But yeah, we've got, it's nice. We've got all five of the Super Friends, no Wonder Twins for once, but we've got Superman flying into the cover, and you've got Futurio, of course, who we saw in a previous issue. I've imprisoned your teammate Superman, and they are as helpless as you soon will be. I love that Aquaman looks like he's just kind of waving. I know that he's supposed to be kind of probably just flailing his arms, but it kind of looks like he's like, hey, Superman, over here.
Clark, like, I'm floating.
It's like, I don't have time for this, Aquaman. I'm taking on this gigantic domed dude. And then down in the corner, we have a little blurb talking about that this is the debut of Plastic Man as a backup feature. Yes, exactly. Of course, he guest appeared in the series proper just a couple of months ago, but now he's debuting as a backup feature, a welcome addition to the Super Friends comic, in my estimation. So, okay, let's talk about the plot of this issue. It's called Futurio Times 10. It's by E. Nelson Bridwell, Romeo Tangel, of course, and Vince Coletta. So the Overlord has continued his cockamamie plan to create a group of highly evolved super beings to help him defeat the Super Friends. His latest creation, Futurio XX, agrees to do his father's wishes, except he has one of his own. Since he is a unique being, he wants a mate, and he wants that mate to be Wonder Woman. Well, not Wonder Woman herself. Futurio says she would be too primitive for him, so he wants the Overlord to create a clone of Wonder Woman, but one advanced as he is. One other condition. Futurio considers himself too evolved to destroy the Super Friends, but he will isolate them so that they become powerless and inactive. At that moment, Superman and Wonder Woman are chasing some armed crooks. Futurio shows up and uses his advanced powers to trap them in unbreakable psychic prisons. He grabs some cells of Wonder Woman's and disappears. Futurio then returns to Overlord's HQ and delivers the cells. Overlord is concerned that if he creates a second being like Futurio, they might create a race of super beings that would prevent him from his plan of world conquest. Futurio then does the same thing to Robin and the Wonder Twins, trapping them in impenetrable psychic prisons. He then finds Batman and Aquaman, who are being assisted in their crime stopping by Green Fury. Futurio creates floating cells specifically designed to trap each hero, then departs. But what he doesn't know is Green Fury used her dazzle power to trick Futurio into thinking Batman was Aquaman and vice versa, which allows the Sea King to use his telepathic powers to call a whale over and smash his floating cell. Batman then frees himself using his utility belt. Batman, Aquaman, and Green Fury then find Superman and Wonder Woman and help free them. The news gets to Overlord. He was furious that his plan didn't work. Futurio uses his mental powers to learn that his father had doubts about creating a clone Wonder Woman. Furious, he uses his amazing powers to hurl himself a million years into the future. Overlord's response? Good riddance. You'd think that would be it, but no. Overlord simply moves on to his third clone from a billion years in the future. Back at the Hall of Justice, the Super Friends wonder why Futurio just didn't kill them. Superman surmises that they'll be hearing from another member of the Futurio family soon enough. Okay, Mike, we'll go through this kind of beat by beat, but overall, what did you think of this particularly insane issue of the Super Friends?
I think this had, it was kind of a hit and miss story. It had some actually pretty good stuff. It had some goofy and fun stuff. It had some, wait a minute, stuff. This, I think there was more fun to it than there was negative, but I think it was kind of a little back and forth on air.
Okay. Have you had a chance to read the, ostensibly the part one of the story, which is not in the previous issue of Super Friends? It's actually a couple of months earlier, but this is sort of part two of this ongoing plot featuring Overlord creating these clones from the future.
I've not had the opportunity to read that one yet, but I don't doubt that I will hit it up at some point on my docket. I'm always going back through past stuff in comics, so it'll no doubt come across my way at some point.
Yeah, it is completely insane that we've got this Overlord character who can, he can create clones slash beings from the future, but they're clones of him, but yet they're from the future. And I mean, like, the idea that you could pluck someone from a million years in the future and that being, whatever being is going to, you're going to pull in, is going to be anyway recognizable as to what we think of as humans. Like, they, like, you look at this guy and the only real difference between him and Overlord is that he's much taller and he's got a giant brain. What is it? I forget the name of the villains, the aliens in Star Trek, the cage, you know, with those giant domes and stuff. But it's like, this, humans have only been on this planet a couple of tens of thousands of years, and yet this guy's a million years in the future and he speaks English. Like, he can, you know, he converts with them. So the first story is just nuts. And then the fact that this plot was so huge that Anielsen Bridwell felt the need to kind of do an arc, as much as this was a kid's comic and it didn't do arcs. This is part two, and there will be a part three to it. It is really just kind of ambitiously crazy on Anielsen Bridwell's part. on the splash page, again, you'll see it on our website, FineWaterPodcast.com. We've got Overlord talking to Futurio, and he's explaining the plan. And there's this picture. He's got a giant screen up, and he's got this picture of the Super Friends, and he's sort of saying, these are the Super Friends, these are your enemies. I love in this picture that all the Super Friends are just standing there, except for Superman, who's flexing his muscle.
Look at these guns.
Why he's doing that, but okay. That's great. He's just
like, all right, everybody, everybody, hands on your hips. We're going to look very serious. Clark.
Yeah, exactly.
Take this seriously, Clark.
I love it. I love it so much. His cape is fluttering in the breeze. Poor Robin, you just see like the top of his head, so he's like buried in the picture.
Can't I be in front?
Yeah. Now Gleek gets to be in the front, but no, not you, Robin. So so of course, as I mentioned in the plot synopsis, Futurio demands a mate. Like, very, very Bride of Frankenstein, and he chooses Wonder Woman. And then I love the whole bit where he's like, well, no, not the Wonder Woman. She's way too primitive for me. I need a clone of Wonder Woman that will be able to keep up with me, which is just, you know, that's fantastic. It's like such confidence, such, you know, like, okay, yeah, all right. And I love that Romeo Tangel draws the little veins on his head, and they're kind of like, you know, the one point when he's talking, they're sort of like pulsing a little bit, which is kind of gross in its own way.
I kind of have to chuckle actually just at the naming of, you know, Futurio times 10, because all I can picture is, yes, I have been named Futurio 20, but no, it's times 10, but two X's are the Roman numeral for 20. I know, but what X is the multiplication X? That makes no sense.
And I'm from the future. I ought to know. As I've mentioned in previous episodes, I'm not reading ahead. I mean, I read all these comics at the time because I bought the series when it came out, but I'm not reading ahead anymore. For the show, I'm not reading ahead. I'm just kind of going the month to month. So if this is Futurio XX, presumably the third one will be Futurio XXX, which I can't imagine be something you would want to put in a kid's comic, but we'll find out when we get there.
Futurio XXX, he has his preferences.
Yeah, oh boy. Played by Vin Diesel. So then we catch up to Superman and Wonder Woman. They are apprehending two crooks. Again, I love the idea that these are just regular guys, right? They literally robbed a somewhere. We don't know it's a bank. She says you wouldn't be robbing banks. They've literally got bags of money with dollar signs on them, and they've got the domino masks, but they're just regular crooks, and they're being chased by Superman and Wonder Woman. Talk about a bigger solution to a smaller problem. I mean, I don't think you need to have both of the most powerful beings to walk the DC universe taking on three regular bank robbers, but okay. You know,
that's, yeah, I'd say that it's like, you know, forget it. I give up.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. Oh my God. This is crazy. So, of course, they subdue the crooks, and Wonder Woman does the whole bracelets together, but then she finds that they're fastened. She can't unclench them. And then that's the Burger of Futurio. And he has this little, cell thingy that he has. I guess it's like a scraper or something that he is scraping off of. I mean, you would think that, I guess he's Futurio and he's built something that is sophisticated enough that it can break Wonder Woman's skin. I would guess a normal machine for this purpose because it's not going to break Wonder Woman's skin, but a Futurio probably built one. So then again, he puts her in this psychic prison. And as you mentioned about the cover, it's got her bracelets bound up so she cannot escape. And of course, that's the thing that renders Wonder Woman, powerless in the moment. And then Futurio is just like, ta-ta, and disappears. And poor Superman and Wonder Woman are stuck in these little cages.
Superman's is basically like red sunlight,
right?
Which eliminates his abilities. Right. Again, I love how they take the little things about the weaknesses of the characters, and they didn't go for the stereotype of let's make a kryptonite one. It's like no, they went with another one of Superman's weaknesses.
Red sun, and I love the panel on page 6. Of the three local cops with axes trying to cut it open, and they're like, it's not working. And there's even the one guy whose axe is down on the ground, like he's just given up, like he's holding a crowbar, and they're just kind of like, oh, all right, I don't know what's gonna happen here. Okay, I just think that's just a wonderful little detail on Romeo Tangel's part. So then Futuria goes back to the lab, and he gives the cells to his father / clone source. I don't know what you would call that. He gives him the little cell collector. And of course, Overlord finally thinks through a little bit of his plan. And he's like, wait a minute. Am I wrong to create this guy? Because if I create a guy, I've created a guy who was from a million years ago and he's far advanced than us. If I create a female version, they're going to create a master race. I love that in the, beginning part of the page, you think that he's having some sort of moral crisis. And then you realize, no, it's just because he wants to control the Earth, and he realizes he doesn't want to create anybody that could get in that way. So, okay, never change, Overlord.
They'll take away my ability to take over the world.
Like, okay, wait, there again, really think these things through. So then Robin and Wonder Twins are stopping some crooks, and then again, the Wonder Twins try to connect their fists and create their powers, and they realize they're stuck in these little prisons as well, where they can't touch. Robin makes pretty quick work of I'd say 6 different crooks. I love that it took Superman and Wonder Woman to do 3, and Robin by himself is handling 5 or 6 guys. I think that's really great. And then we see there's a guy standing there who is got glasses, and he looks like he's a mugging victim, and they realize that that's Futurio, and he changes his appearance to trap Robin. He sticks Robin in a psychic prison, and he says, you will never move again, and he turns Robin into kind of like a stone being, and then he goes, does another little ta-ta thing. He's got this little hand gesture when he leaves the Super Friends where he waves at them. This is kind of like extra, like, ha-ha, he's really snotty about it.
I gotta say, earlier in the story, Futurio talks about his moral code. And how, he won't kill. But, in Robin's case, I think it was, coated with a type of metal unknown in this century. I'm pretty sure that's going to kill him. I will put him in this situation. If he happens to die, that's not on me.
And that's kind of what he says, too, at the beginning.
Earlier, he says that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to kill him, but if they die, that's kind of like Batman. And Batman Begins, when he's, he's talking to Ra's al Ghul, I'm not going to kill you, but I don't have to save you. You're like, no, that's kind of killing him, though. Yeah. okay, Futurio.
Now I'm kind of picturing Futurio in that Batman sketch of, no, he's just sleeping.
Yeah, it's like, what? Okay, again, Futurio.
He's fine.
Futurio is far advanced, and he's not concerned with our petty moral problems. Now we're down at the the waterfront, and we got the criminals. There are these crooks. I like one of them looks like Popeye. I think that's kind of a fun thing. He's kind of like the white hat and the striped shirt sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And then we see Batman standing there. It's not a lot, but they are at least Romeo Tangel and the colorist are at least trying to do a little bit of a mood thing. Like Batman is standing there with hands on hips with the cape fluttering.
The moon behind him.
The moon behind him. It's a little Batman-y. Batman and the Super Friends, of course, never gets to be very much of, you know, the Dark Knight detective kind of thing. But they're trying a little bit here. So, okay. And I love that Aquaman, the crooks say, he's only just one guy. And then Aquaman says, yes, but I make two. I love Aquaman.
Just leaned up against the rock.
Yes. I love his jaunty pose. I love that he's very
confident.
Don't
mind me.
Yeah, don't mind Aquaman. And then the guy goes, Aquaman, now I'm starting to worry. This is great.
And that's probably your favorite line in the entire, comic.
Absolutely. I love this guy. Finally showing Aquaman some respect. But then we get Green Fury, who just appeared in the last issue of Super Friends. And so it really does seem like Danny Nelson Bridwell was, you know, on his way to kind of making her a regular, the kind of the only new member of the Super Friends. He created all the Global Guardians. Obviously, he was pretty happy with this character because she appeared several times in the book and she got a whole guest appearance in the previous issue. But yeah, it's cool that she's here. So maybe, you know,
I'm still here.
Yeah, I mean, it might be that Chris Franklin mentions this in the comments from the last issue, that maybe at this point, E. Nelson Bridwell knew the writing was on the wall, that he knew that the book only had like five issues left to it. And he was like, oh, what the heck? You know, like, why not give this character that I created a little bit of real estate? So it's cool. I like her.
Kind of going the Spider-Man route.
What do you mean? What's the Spider-Man
route? Well, you know, like Amazing Fantasy.
Oh, Amazing Fantasy,
it's about to end. Let's just throw in the Spider-Man character I've been wanting to do that nobody thinks is going to work.
Of course. Of course. I can't believe I didn't know what you were talking about.
I do the Spider-Man thing.
Yeah, I could see that. And it's like, why not? You know what? I mean, Ian B was a company man through and through. You know, he worked for DC, I think, like his whole career practically. And he created tons of characters for them. And I think he was probably like, hey, this is something that my company can use in the future. So let me boost her up a little bit. So she shoots her flame breath on the guy, on one of the guys. He drops a gun. Batman kicks a couple of guys. Aquaman has a great panel where he's punching a dude. He's like, come on, Green Fury.
Smug.
Yeah. He's got this great smirk. Yeah. Come on, Green Fury. We can use a little workout ourselves. I don't need my flame breath to stop these criminosos. So it's great. I love it. I absolutely love it. And then they're all standing there looking at the guys and they're all unconscious. And then, of course, Futurio gets the drop on them and he shoots rays at them and he's creating the bubbles. And we see Green Fury sort of figuring out what's going on. He sends Aquaman onto the kind of this flame bubble and sends it out to sea and then disappears. Now, like a lot of supervillains, especially, say, Batman villains on the TV show, they don't finish their work. You know, they get 80% of the way there, and then they take off, giving the heroes a chance to get out of these prisons.
Yeah, I was just going to, you know, leave him here and just assume everything goes well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm a super advanced guy from a million years in the future, but I can't wait five more minutes just to make sure that these heroes that I put in there.
I have
prison.
A clone wife to go meet.
It's true. Maybe if I had a clone Wonder Woman waiting for me, I'd be in a hurry to get back or something. I don't know. Maybe so. But then we see that the bubble that we think is Batman, there's a word balloon. And he says, this was devised to keep Batman prisoner. And we see that it's Aquaman. It says, but I'm not the Batman. Green Fury used her dazzle power to confuse our tailor. By the way, calling it the dazzle power makes me think that they really should have done a Green Fury Dazzler team up. DC Marvel book, because, you know, this is kind of a similar power set. And I love that the bubble that Futurio presumably created for Aquaman, Batman is in there, but he created for Aquaman, could simply be defeated by Batman pulling out a saw from his utility belt. He just cuts a hole in it. Like, that is not a sophisticated prison.
This is his anti-bubble repellent bat spray.
Yeah. I mean, come on, you know, you're a million years from the future. You couldn't create something a little harder to get out. I mean, he puts Superman and Wonder Woman into things that they can't escape. Why don't put them all in those? They can't get out of them. But okay, fine.
I mean, if you want to give benefit of the doubt, you could go with the idea Batman's the only one without any actual superpowers, so he could have potentially underestimated him. But that's giving benefit of the doubt there. And I mean, he is, again, an advanced being.
Yeah.
He shouldn't really be the type to underestimate.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. Again, you're from the million years from the future. You can't foresee this contingency for Churio, but okay. All right. That's fine. So Batman escapes, and then our heroes find Superman and Wonder Woman. Green Fury helps Superman escape because she can destroy his bubble using her flame breath.
She basically turns it from red to yellow.
Red to yellow.
Which gives him the power to burst out.
Exactly. Now, again, even as a kid, I was always a little dubious of the science of that. That's like, well, she's just changing the color. She's not changing its like genetic properties in any way. She's just changing the color. If I'm trapped in a cell, right, and somebody paints the cell green, that doesn't make the cell any easier to get out of. It just changed its color. But
it's just like Superman apparently is a lantern. And red is the one thing his lantern power doesn't work against. So you just change the color and then he can use it.
All right. Fair enough. Fair enough. And we've only got one page left Super in the lantern. Story. We don't have time. We don't have time to debate this. And so we cut back to Overlord's base and he's like, I can't believe this. They got out. And Churio kind of doesn't really take any responsibility for this. Like, he's just kind of like, well, all right. You're just going to use this as an excuse to get out of your agreement. Like, well, for sure, you're the one that screwed all this up. like, okay. And I love how angry he is in the last panel. We see him where he's like, argh! He's like, I can sense you did not intend to do it anyway. And then Overlord is like, well, okay. I explained to you that why this might not work. Wonder Woman cells are created for spirit being for you. And you wouldn't have liked that. And then Futura is like, well, to hell with you. Well, not, he doesn't literally say that, of course. This is a kid's comic.
More or less.
I'm disappearing. I'm going to go live a million years in the future. And then Overlord's like, good riddance.
Screw you, I'm out.
Yeah, screw you, I'm out. Screw you guys, I'm going home. But Overlord waits not even a half a moment till the next panel where he just is immediately at the test tube. I hope I'll have a better look with my third clone. Why? Why would you think that's going to go any better, Overlord?
He's like the DC version of the Jackal, who just has more and more clones just ready as soon as one's done. Okay, next.
Yeah, it's just like the man is indefatigable. So, and then we cut back to the Hall of Justice, and all the super friends are there. By the way, I just want to mention Romeo Tangal, a fine artist. I mean, obviously, I prefer Ramona Freyden, who is much missed on this book, but a fine artist. The one thing I don't like, I hate that he gives Aquaman such a bushy haircut. This drives me nuts. It's like he's got this big mane of hair, which is very, I guess, maybe stylish at the time. You're talking 1981, we're just still kind of coming out of the 70s, but I can always tell it's by drawn by Romeo Tangal when Aquaman has like a big head of blonde hair. And you can see that in this last panel.
Mm-hmm. I'm also noticing that his glove like exactly matches Green Fury's outfit to the point that they're practically blending.
Mm-hmm. You can see this last panel is crowded. Like there's
Robin again. Why am I always in the back?
Yeah. All the super friends are there, plus the Wonder Twins, plus Green Fury. And so, yeah, it is very, very, very crowded. Like a lot of times with these super friend stories, mm-hmm. E. Nelson Bridwell crams 30 pages of plot in 16 pages of story. And the last page is always incredibly crowded. Like, oh my God, we're going to wrap this up. And then we point to the, Superman says, I'm sure we'll see the Futurio family one of these days, leading to what will eventually be part three of the storyline, but not yet. Next issue, we have a whole nother story involved. So that is part two of the Futurio storyline. It is very charming. It is very goofy.
It was fun. I mean, yeah, it had some things that were just like, wait a minute. But in general, it is fun. I mean, it's meant for kids. So you don't want to take that as you can talk down to them because they're kids. But at the same time, you can accept it being kind of goofy and fun.
Totally. Totally. And it's keeping in tradition with the Super Friends cartoon, where stuff happened because it did. The Bat Plane, can time travel. And Aquaman says, oh, our JLA communicators have our nuclear powers. I'll just bury this in the ground. And a million years from now, they'll be able to find it and find it. You're like, wait, what? That's just how these things work. So, okay, it's fine. And we're
science.
Science. Yeah, we're 43 issues in. It's not going to change. So, okay, fine. So, okay, for this story, who would you give the award to the best friend? Who do you think, what hero do you think came off best?
You know, I kind of got to lean towards Batman because Batman was one of the only ones who managed to get himself out of his predicament. Although technically Aquaman did too, and both of them got it from Green Fury mixing up Futurio. You can tell I'm already second guessing myself as I say it.
There's no wrong answer, Mike.
I'm kind of leaning towards Batman. Plus, we do get that, you know, kind of cool Dark Knight moment that was just really awesome. And, you know, style points count, I think.
All right, fair enough. I'm giving it to Green Fury just because she helps trick Futurio into switching Batman and Aquaman, and she helps Superman get out of his prison. I mean, Ian B's playing favorites here. This is his character, and he's given her a lot to do. So I'm going to give it to her. And we always talk about the villain. This is this Overlord character. He never appeared outside of the Super Friends series past this. So this is character that will not survive the cancellation of the Super Friends. But he's fun. He's goofy.
Bring him back, DC.
What'd you say?
Bring him back, DC.
Yeah, there you go. Right. Yeah. Somebody should bring him back. You know, I mean, again, his plans are completely ridiculous, and they probably involve technology that cost $4 trillion to pull off, but it's one guy that can do it all himself. But that's what it is. That's
comics.
Yeah, exactly. He's been bothering the Super Friends for 35 issues so far out of this. You know, he's been around since like the first year of the series, and he cannot be defeated unless, presumably, until his final appearance. So anyway, that's the first story. I do want to briefly mention the letters page, just because this letters page is finally getting to the letters for Super Friends number 38, which featured the first Seraph backup, which we talked about on that episode with Captain Entropy and Henry Bernstein. And you never know what letters came in versus what gets printed, but every single letter that is printed in this page, on the letters page, the Super Friends letters page, is overwhelmingly positive towards the Seraph story. And everyone that listened to the episode knows how much we all loved it. And the Seraph stories have just been, since then there's been a second one. The Seraph stories are just terrific. So it's nice to see that these letter writers responded to it the way we did, you know, 40 years later. They're all very, very like, wow, main story was good, but the Seraph story was just next level. And I thought that's great. I'm glad that Seraph was appreciated in the moment, and it wasn't just us looking at it 40 years later. So that was cool. I'm glad to see that they got such positive notices for that story.
Some things never change.
Absolutely. So the second story, as I mentioned, is the debut of Plastic Man. Yes. That sound you hear is our friend Max Romero smiling. Now, this strip, the Plastic Man strip, written by Martin Pasco and drawn by Joe Staten and Bob Smith. Bob Smith, former Super Friends inker back here, was running in Adventure Comics, of course, back when that book was first Plastic Man and Starman. Then it became Plastic Man, Aquaman, and Starman. And then when that book changed formats yet again, they moved Plastic Man over to here. It makes sense. If Plastic Man's a humor strip, and humor is often considered kind of more for kids, and there's certainly nothing in here that kids couldn't appreciate or see. Mm-hmm. So I'm happy to have it here. I love this era of Plastic Man. Max and I did an episode of the Fire and Water podcast many years ago talking about some of the adventure stories, and he's the expert. He was very positive on him. I've always loved Plastic Man. He's always been one of my favorite DC superheroes, and I absolutely love this run of Plastic Man. I think Martin Pasco had a really nice combo of, like, there's this film noir thing going on, but then you've got the kind of hoary dad jokes with the puns, and you've got the villains that are sort of Dick Tracy-esque villains. So this was a feature that did not get enough play by DC, in my estimation. It ran an adventure for, let's see, I think 11 issues from 467 to 478, then moved over to here, and it ran a couple issues, and then that was it. I just think this is absolutely terrific. Are you a particular fan of Plastic Man?
I like Plastic Man. I like the kind of stretchy power set in general. I've always liked that as a power. So I tend to gravitate towards characters like Plastic Man, Elongated Man, Mr. Fantastic, things like that. And one thing that I remember surprising me when I first started really reading Plastic Man stories is that while he does have a lot of the goofiness, especially with the different looks that he gets, in a lot of cases, he plays the straight man.
Yeah. Yeah, that is true. I mean, straight man. I guess so. I mean, Woozy Winks is certainly the comedy. Yeah,
comparatively.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Plastic Man is not cracking jokes exactly. And he's not, I mean, he's being funny by the shapes that he absorbs. Mm-hmm. He turns into mailboxes and all these different things. He turns into a pizza in this story. But yeah, he is our hero, and he's the one who's trying to stop the crimes. Like, he's not bumping into things and causing mayhem the way Woozy is.
Exactly.
Story, I should have named the title. It's called Mouth Trap. I already mentioned it's by Martin Pascoe, Joe Staton, and Bob Smith. So Plastic Man investigates an armored car robbery, which resulted in millions of dollars worth of diamonds being stolen. Turns out it was the work of the mush-mouthed gangster known as Chatterbox. Plaz learns that Chatterbox was working with a local radio show host, Lou Quashus. And it took me a second to get that. I guess I should pronounce it Luquacious. And using a specially made gizmo to interrupt any calls to the police. With the inadvertent help of his pal Woozy Winks, Plaz apprehends Chatterbox and recovers the loot. I love this thing. I loved it. It's fun. Joe Staton, one of my favorite artists. Bob Smith, one of my favorite inkers. They're a great combination. I love the villain, Chatter. I love, like, you know, he's straight out of Dick Tracy.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. He is exactly the kind of character you would expect to see right there next to, you know, Flat Top and
yep.
Itchy and Mumbles Face and all yep. that.
Yeah, yeah. And the whole bit of Chatterbox is that he runs all his words together. So every word balloon, it's all his words is kind of a, you know, oh, it can be only one thing. Bless him again. That kind of thing.
Yeah, I so usually I have it. To stop there. It's like, okay, let me take a second here. Okay, put a space there. Okay.
yeah, I absolutely love it. Like I said, Plastic Man becomes a pizza. At one point, that gets him into the villain's hideout and becomes a trash can. He becomes a giant sort of tarpaulin with sort of suction cups that keeps him. Then he kind of rolls up like a carpet. He lays flat. And at another point, he always does that. And then he becomes a stairwell where Chatterbox thinks, well, the Chatterbox is escaping. He runs down the stairs and he doesn't notice there's just a little choo-choo train like under his feet. And you see that that's Plastic Man getting ahead of him. And then he turns into a stairwell that is, of course, actually Plastic Man. And halfway down, he converts and slides Chatterbox down into the floor. And that's where he gets apprehended. So yeah, I just love this thing. I thought this was a great feature. If I remember, Max and I talked about it way back then, that these strips have not been collected anywhere, I don't think, which is a darn shame because they deserve to be. I think they would be so, that, you know, it would probably require some other stories to fill out a book, but because these are only 8-9 pages and I think they did like 15 of them or something, so it wouldn't be a pretty short book. But I would love to see these get some love again because I just think they're really charming.
And I'll be honest with you, with as much as comics tend to be leaning more towards an older audience with a lot of the content, having a collection like this come out would be something nice for the younger readers to get them into comics with a fun character, since it could be kind of hard sometimes with how rough a lot of comics can be nowadays.
Yeah, you know, right. You don't see stuff like this. I mean, Kyle Baker had his run on Plastic Man, which I love. Again, I've loved most of the iterations I've read of Plastic Man. The Jack Cole, I've only read a few of those, but I like those. I like the Ramona Fraiden ones from the 70s. I liked it when he was in Justice League. I thought that was really good. I mean, again, when I was a kid, my five favorite superheroes from DC were Aquaman, of course, Batman, Green Arrow, Hawk Woman, and Plastic Man. And I got four of them in the JLA, and I kept wanting Plastic Man. No offense to Elongated Man, but I always wanted Plastic Man in the JLA just because I was like, oh, and then I wanted him in Super Friends. He appears one time in the Super Friends cartoon. And as I mentioned on the episode we did where he guest starred in here in Super Friends with Max, I kind of wish that Plastic Man had been worked into the Super Friends a little more, you know? I wish, again, the book was already going to get crowded, But I just like, I think Plastic Man, he's such an iconic hero.
And he would have fit well with the style.
Yeah, totally, totally. So I'm glad at least that that he gets it back up here. And then there's a little blurb saying next month is Jack-O-Lantern, which I've not been a big fan of so far. But okay, maybe the story's called Death Cry of the Banshee. Maybe that one will be better. We'll find out.
Is this next a month. DC Marvel crossover?
Yeah, if only. So that is Super Friends number 43. So overall, as your first issue of Super Friends as a comic, I mean, is this the kind of thing you would want to read more of, Mike?
Like I said, I found it a lot of fun. So I would definitely be open to reading more of this. And I'm enjoying getting into the cartoon itself. And I do like when you get a comic that ties into another medium. Like, currently I am working my way through some of the Star Wars High Republic stuff. And I'm reading the novels, reading the comics, watching the TV shows. And I found a list that shows chronologically where each of those fit. And I love how they all tie together. So I like things like this, where you get a comic that's based on the cartoon, as long as it's done well. And I feel that they really do hit the tone and the heart of the cartoon in the comic.
I agree. Like I said, I always loved the cartoon. I always loved the comic. And I wish that, you know, I keep thinking that like somehow a TV show helps sell a comic book, but we just know that from numerous examples, that's just not true. It just doesn't work that way. You know, we'd like to think that it does, but it doesn't. But it always seems so strange to me, even as a kid, that I was like, well, there's a Super Friends cartoon, but like the comic is canceled. Like, that's weird to me, but obviously it, you know, it wasn't, if it continued to sell, they would have kept publishing it. But no, I mean, but it's so weird to me that this book ends in 1981 and then the Super Friends cartoon runs for 5 more years. It's not like the cartoon, you know, lasted another 6 months. It lasted another half decade for Pete's sake. Now, of course, by that point, they had morphed it into kind of the Superpowers toy line and it became that whole thing. But I don't know. It's always just such a shame to me that more kids that were watching the cartoon, which you have to think numbered in the millions back then, back when there's only 3 channels.
Yeah.
Millions of kids are watching it, that they didn't go and then spend 50 cents to buy the comic.
It's a good gateway.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought so. So, well, that is Super Friends number 43. Mike, I hope this 2-year-long wait was worth it. I don't know if any podcast of mine can live up to that level of anticipation, but I appreciate you again, you calling your shot so early.
Yeah, this was fun. I enjoyed getting in here. It's been a while since I've gotten a chance to podcast talking about comics. So it was fun to get back in here and talk comics again.
Oh, well, that's good. Well, that's a perfect place to ask you. Where can people find you out on the internet?
Well, I have a YouTube channel, Mike's Geek World. And I'm also one of the co-hosts of the Tangle Cast, put out by Beneath the Tangles, where we basically we talk anime from a Christian perspective.
That was not where I was expecting that was going.
Yeah, yeah. It surprises a lot of people. And of course, people can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and the like at Stale Dog with 2 G's, because double G power activate form of an out of date 90s Twitter handle.
I wonder what Twitter would have been like in the 90s. Well, again, Mike, thank you so much. I really appreciate, first of all, again, your patience, your forward thinking, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, that you thought about this 2 years out and then you were still willing to do it, you know, 2 years later. You waited all this time. So I really do appreciate it. So thank you for coming on.
Oh, yeah. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely. So, okay, everybody, stay tuned. I'm going to run some commercial announcements. And when I come back, I'm going to do some listener feedback.
Hey. Who's Editing? A thought experiment in which Siskoid and his guest appoint themselves editors of a comic book line at DC Comics. But the joke's on them, because they can only use the characters of a specific issue of Who's Who, and in fact must use them. Great ideas? Yes, we think so. Cool reinventions? Of course. Crisis fatigue? We guarantee it. Who's Editing? Now on its own feed, only at the Fire and Water Podcast Network, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify.
Here's the real thing in racing thrills. Here are Tonka's new power punchers, pocket-sized cars. You can rev them up and pow, pow, power punchers. You can race them and run them, jump them and bump them.
The Tonka toy will come for fun, fun, fun.
A pocket full of fun. Power punchers, each sold separately. New from Tonka.
And it's time for listener feedback, and these are the comments we got on the previous episode of For All Mankind, episode number 42, with my guests Siskoid and Boss. First up is Isamu Hideki Yukinori, who says, I had a discussion with Uncle Tim Price and Uncle Martin Gray about this comic last October on Twitter, commenting about how the cover mistakenly showed the Green Fury flying without the use of her proboscis propulsion, Uncle Tim's words, and Uncle Tim reasoned that on the cover she was using momentum to keep her going like she had done on page 5. I never thought about a possible Alan Scott connection to the Green Fury's mystic flame until Uncle Boss mentioned it. I wonder if she would recite a similar oath. I shall breathe all over evil, for evildoers cannot stand the heat, the hot breath of the Green Fury. Doesn't rhyme, Isamu, but I thought that was a big part of it, but otherwise, pretty good. Martin Gray responds, I remember being disappointed that B changed her hero name to Fire, as it's so boring compared to Green Flame / Phlegm. Mind, Green Fury was the best. I want to play the Oath game, too. In coldest night, or when it's hot, no evil shall escape my snot. Let those who would cause mankind's woes beware my power, Green Fury's nose. Great episode, chap. Well done, Martin. Great episode, chaps. Well done on getting Boss and Siskoid. I'm all for twofers. It's weird just how much more powerful B was originally with that flame breath, illusions, and another power we see in her next appearance. Ooh, what are we talking about? The metagene didn't do her any big favors. Do you think Green Thumb is another booger gag? A villain who's been sticking his thumb up his nose? Whatever, it's alarming how much space E&B gave to his backstory. Rob McCarthy says, throws random alien seeds is perfect. Need to defeat Superman? Can do. Oh no, it's page 22, so he drops the wrong seed and gets eaten. Lucky749 says, wonderful show and episode. Sad to hear Super Friends is ending, but as my brother Jeremy always says, it is what it is. A hero who flies by blowing her nose. Did she do that when she became Fire, or did she fly like the Human Torch later? Also, it's a good thing Green Fury didn't have a cold or allergies. One sneeze could send her halfway to France. Matt Saroy says, another fine episode. Each new episode is bittersweet since we are approaching the finale. Siskoid mentioned how the Wonder Twins provide great visuals. This is indeed true. They often had interesting transformations. None were interesting than in the last episode of season 6 of the Super Friends. The segment is titled Stowaway Some Space, and the Wonder Twins become an octopus riding an ice unicycle. That sounds cool. I'm sure I've seen it at some point. Brian Chufo says that this story would have fit in with the Legion of Substitute Heroes. Chlorophyll Kid goes on a bad trip from accidentally enlarging the wrong type of mushrooms, and Fire Lad, who suddenly realizes he can also breathe fire through his nose and can finally ditch the bulky Legion Flight Belt Consolation Prize, saves the day with the help of Princess Projector. By the way, how cool would it have been in one of these backup features to have Gleek visited by Prody and given three impossible tasks as entry into the Legion of Super Pets? It's an interesting thought experiment, Brian, if you could call it that. Yeah, it would have been kind of fun to have a Gleek-only backup with, like, Crypto and Ace the Bat-Hound or something. I mean, that certainly would have leaned into ENB's predilections of digging up obscure characters from the DCU, and it kind of has a, you know, a kid's feel to it of, like, an all-animal adventure. It's a shame they never did that. Adobosnar says, yeah, let me add my feeling of melancholy as the show nears its end, although it's nice that Siskoid and Boss made a showing. Guys, we still have a bunch to go. Don't worry about it. I have to say, although Remy Tangle and Vince Coletta are nowhere near Ramona Freyden, based on the gallery page, I don't think the art was that bad. Glitta's inking seems to mesh pretty well with Tangle's pencils, and the end result is solid if unspectacular. And it's always nice to see Green Fury. I've always been amused by her nose flame propulsion system and was sorry to see it dropped later, along with the change of the name to the generic Fire. By the way, you guys joked about fireworks being used to celebrate Christmas, but since the early 1990s, I've been living in a country, Croatia, where this is in fact tradition. In some years, it's worse than others, with everybody lighting firecrackers and whatnot. But it was way worse in the 90s, as one might imagine, during and just after the war, when actual firearms came into play, including, in one instance, I still recall to my dismay, some clown firing off an AK-47 in a suburban neighborhood. Luckily, no casualties or property damage, as far as I know. Also, when Siskoid mentioned a TV show version of How Green Is My Valley, I at first thought he might have been mixing it up with Green Acres, but then double-checked and found that there were indeed two miniseries that adapted the novel, both produced by the BBC, first in the 1960s and the second in the mid-1970s. Eric says, B's powers remind him of an obscure but unforgettable villain from Archie Comics' Mighty Comics superhero line in the 60s. In Fly Man number 35, Fly Man and Fly Girl faced off against a villain named Phantasmon the Terrible, whose powers included shooting lightning from his nose as he dramatically boasted, "Behold, lightning bolts crashing out of my nostrils." The power was crazy enough to begin with, but the fact that he bragged about it was the topper. Eric, that is a deep, deep pull. Sean M. Myers from this very network says, "Hello, Cisco and Boss. It was great having you on this show. Welcome aboard. Rob, fantastic ad placement. I loved it." Thank you, Sean. I'm glad somebody noticed it. Yeah, I mean, the rule for those commercial spots is it always has to be something that aired on Saturday mornings. Like, maybe you might have seen it during the Super Friends, and there was no chance that that ad for Miracle-Gro would have run on the Super Friends, but I couldn't help myself. Regarding Jeffrey Seldon, the great actor who's always on vacation, whose memorabilia Green Thumb tried to steal. Could it be some kind of sort of maybe perhaps a kind of call out to Kathy Seldon, who played Debbie Reynolds in Singing in the Rain? That's a real stretch, Sean. He just wanted to get a musical in there. I love the Wonder Twins Christmas story. It was really nice that there was no threat to stop or an enemy to defeat, just the twins trying to help a family at Christmas time. Mark Baker writes us. So about that Wonder Twins story, can we talk a bit more about that ridiculous cultural requirement to never accept charity, no matter how needy one is? It's one thing to instill a solid work ethic, but that's a really toxic attitude to hold on to, and it's not the first time it's come up in this comic, to which Siskoid replies, agreed. Yeah, Mario, we don't have time to get into it. There's a whole culture we have here in this country. Maybe it's in other countries, but I've seen it in America where it's, you know, working yourself to death and never taking help for any reason is sort of a badge of honor, and I just don't understand. I think it's pernicious, I think it's evil, and it's just a terrible thing that we have in our society. So yeah, I agree with you on that. Paul Ken from this network, of course, says, awesome episode as usual, but wouldn't dirt from Krypton just turned into kryptonite? To which Mark Baker Wright replied, as I understand it, if the dirt was taken from Krypton before Krypton exploded, as specified in the story, no, it would not turn into kryptonite. Kryptonite, as far as I understand it, forms when fragments of the exploded planet go through some kind of change caused by either the explosion itself or by traveling through space or something like that. A pre-explosion sample would not thus become kryptonite. None of this suggests it would cause Kryptonian plants to have superpowers, of course, but that's another matter. then Isim, who followed up, Mr. Baker Wright is correct. The change was caused by the nuclear reaction from the explosion of Krypton. I remember reading one of my dad's Superman comics, issue 393, where the Master Jailer was able to hijack nuclear missiles and modify them to duplicate this reaction. So when they struck Superman, they changed the Kryptonian fabric of his costume into kryptonite. Apparently, everything from Krypton becomes super on Earth. The Kryptonian fabrics of Superman's costume became indestructible, as well as super stretchy, much to Uncle Siskoid and Uncle Bass's chagrin. Brett Michael Young, oh, here we go, says, Merry Christmas, Rob, Siskoid and Bass. Where is this exotic land of Canada you speak of? Anyway, weird issue. Well, it's not Ramona Freyden. I've always had a soft spot for Romeo Tangal. He was the original inker for Perez on New Teen Titans, so that's where I know him best. Plus, he's got a cool name. It makes him sound like he's always in a white suit smoking a long cigarette at an outdoor club in Majorca. The guys are right. Green Thumb would definitely fit in the background of a villain pub scene. His powers are actually pretty cool. When he grew that tree to rob the actor's place, did he take time to decorate it before entering the apartment? Very festive of him. Green Fury blowing fire to burn away the smoke in an enclosed room may have not been the best way to protect the rare art. Plus, Batman may have fared a little better with Green Thumb if he'd skipped the hands-on-hip boasting and just punched him in the back of the head. Once again, Aquaman gets the short end of the stick. He runs the whole way from the dock to the Hall of Justice, only to get one panel of dialogue and strangled by a weed. Hey, Superman, I'm here. What's the emergency? Wait, what? Who the hell is this guy? Batman calls me away from running Atlantis on a holiday so I can watch Donnie and Marie beat up Studio 54's Gardner. Does Rich Boy want to explain this to Mira? Some of us actually have a family, Bruce. Did you hear Robin's thumb pun? Just the worst. I used to think it was a dick move that you sent Kara to an orphanage, but you had it right, man. No sidekicks. Look at me. I'm saddled with Aqualad. It's mentoring Gabe Kaplan in hot pants. Can Thumb do cannabis? My weed guy died at the Jack in the Box concert. Well, great reference for the other episode, Brett. While discussing for me to crush the backups featuring Roxette, this one was actually very sweet. No complaints. As I said in a previous show, I'm really going to miss your pop culture references to the Wonder Twins, as we only have a couple more backups with them on this show left. And then finally, Chris Franklin, of course, from our network, says, fun discussion, fellas. I had this issue right off the stands since I missed issue 25. This is my intro to Green Fury / Green Flame / Fire. Even as a kid, having a flaming farmer's handkerchief as a power was weird. I'm glad they eventually gave her a little more respectable power set. Bruce does seem a bit creepy here, modernized and all that. I remember thinking Green Thumb looked pretty cool. Hey, I was only 5. I do recall noticing his origin is somewhat similar to the comic version of Clayface 2, Matt Hagen, who also found extraordinary powers while scuba diving and used them for rather lame purposes. Having picked up most of the remaining issues of this title, it did seem like Green Fury was a full-time member, or at least a recurring reservist. I guess Ian B. figured who was paying attention at this point. Yeah, I think that's probably a fair estimation. Or maybe just, you know, he probably knew the book was wrapping up and he liked this creation and thought, you know, why not give her a little more space? So anyway, that's it for the comments. Thanks, everybody. I always appreciate reading your feedback on these episodes. Big thanks to Mike Staley for coming by and talking about this issue of Super Friends, another Futurio appearance. And I guess we've got one more coming. It's an arc. It's a genuine story arc here in Super Friends. But thanks everybody for listening. That's going to do it. Of course, you can find all the back episodes of the show on our website, firewaterpodcast.com. We're always talking Super Friends on Twitter at For All Mankind SF. You can subscribe to the show in any podcatcher of your choice. And if you want to support the Firewater Podcast Network, just go to patreon.com/FW podcast. And there you're going to lock various rewards, one of which is the name checked on a show of your choice. So big thanks to Chuck Dill, Stanford M. Brown, Gord Tolton, and David S. Gutierrez for their support of the Fire and Water Network. I really appreciate it. So thanks for listening to For All Mankind. Join us next episode when we look at Super Friends number 44, Peril of the Forgotten Identities.
An FWTV podcast.